Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey folks, Hannah here. I'm jumping into your feed before today's episode to let you know that I have a brand new YouTube show called Making Worlds. Monthly episodes are released on our Witch Please Productions Patreon, and they are an absolute hoot. Every episode, I am joined by a cool guest to talk about a sci-fi or fantasy text that has inspired them to move differently in the world and to imagine otherwise. Our first episode was about Our Flag Means Death, and our second episode is about Dimension 20. I am a huge nerd about both of those franchises, so as you can imagine, I had the time of my life. You can watch the episodes or listen to them as a podcast right now by becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/awitchplease. You'll also get access to a backlog of many other perks. Again, head to patreon.com/awitchplease to become a supporter today for as little as $5 a month.
Hello and welcome to Witch Please, a fortnightly podcast about the Harry Potter world. I'm Marcel Cosman.
And I'm Hannah McGregor. And because we're focusing on fandom today, Marcel, I want you to tell me about your first experiences of fandom in the Sorting Chat. What's the first thing you were a fan of?
Oh boy. I had an extremely intense emotional attachment to a lot of television because I'm an only child of a single parent who is a geriatric millennial. So I have a very intimate relationship with television.
You were raised by TV.
I was raised by TV. So My Little Pony, She-Ra, Princess of Power.
The OG.
Yeah. Gem and the Holograms.
Yes.
And this is the one that I actually had like a lot of toys for. So I think this might have been the most intense of my fandoms, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Me and my friends spent so much time making believe that we were, we insisted when I played with my friend Brooke, we insisted that we were both April O'Neil.
I love that.
And then just imagined the turtles, but that's what childhood imagination is for.
Exactly. It's so capacious, right? It has so much room for very confusing and complicated realities. What about you, Hannah? What are your earliest fandoms?
I recently, after seeing early photos from the new Barbie movie, unlocked an early memory of what I think might be like the first fan event I attended as a child, which was a birthday party that a friend of mine had where it was a Barbie-themed birthday party, but there was an actor there playing Barbie who you could, like, interact with. And I guess that's just like people have, like, Disney princesses at kids' birthday parties. Like, that's a thing. But it wasn't, I don't think I've ever been to another birthday party with an actor at it yet. It's not too late. In our 40s, we're all going to start having like mimes at our birthdays. It's the new thing. But I had totally forgotten. It was like we went to this place, this building.
Chuck E. Cheese.
It wasn't Chuck E. Cheese. It was just a Barbie-themed room.
Whoa.
And they had like all the good Barbie shit that you can't afford, you know?
like the house that has walls.
Yes, exactly. And then there was this woman who just was Barbie.
Wow.
Anyway, I had forgotten entirely, but that was clearly my first experience of a fan convention.
That's incredible.
My first LARPer.
When you were Barbie LARPing. Barping, if you will. Barbie action role play. Barping.
Live action Barbie play?
LARPing.
I think it's labping.
Well, that's fun. I know that it is sort of a thing that, like, a lot of people experience different kinds of gatekeeping and challenges and stuff like that in their various fandoms. And so I'm just wondering did you experience any gatekeeping when you were barping?
Not when I was barping. That's such a gross word. We have to stop saying
sorry,
it.
Sorry, I can't help it.
It sounds like a cross between burping and barfing. It's awful. But a much later sort of attempted fandom of mine was when I was in grade 7 and 8, our middle school was right around the corner from a comic book shop. And I was like ready to become a comics nerd. I was ready. And then every time I went and like bought the comics I was interested in, the men who worked there made fun of me.
What the fuck?
And I didn't come back to comics for like another maybe 15 years. My re-entry into comics was in Edmonton when we went to that feminist comic shop to watch the screening of that documentary about women in comics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I bought a copy of Bitch Planet, and then my comics fandom truly began. But I distinctly remember this being like, yes, this is for me. And these like adult men being like, it is not. You should go.
Imagine
being an adult and behaving like that.
Yeah, I mean, one, imagine being an adult and behaving like that, but also like imagine taking any kind of satisfaction out of making a child feel bad about anything, but also comics that you sell.
Yeah.
They're in your store.
Yeah. You have them. You stalked Supergirl. It's not my fault.
Well, that's bullshit. And I'm sorry.
But you know what isn't bullshit is the really exciting guests that we have today. So I think we should go meet them now.
I think that's a great idea. Let's do it. Because this is a very special episode, we're doing something that we've never done before, but that I'm always trying to do. And that is skipping straight through revision and going headfirst into the segment where we get to meet our special guests. So grab your books, people, because we're already late for Transfiguration class.
And we definitely don't want to be late because we have not one, but two visiting lecturers today.
Two! A witch, please, first.
We're thrilled. Lark Malachi Gray is a queer and trans artist. He is a full-time podcast maker and the creator of a gender-free tarot deck of monsters called Under the Bed Tarot. Jessie Blount is a queer Black writer, baker, and podcast maker. When she's not yelling about pop culture, she can be found collecting bird facts, urban foraging, writing fanfic, and treating her cat like a princess. Together, Lark and Jessie are hashtag Ruthless Productions, the creators of very queer, very nerdy podcasts. The Gaily Prophet is their Harry Potter podcast. Escape. Did I say that? Escape from Reality is about the Simon Snow series. And their newest creation is the Gay Pirate Podcast, which is obviously about Our Flag Means Death. They also host a Patreon-only Buffy podcast called We Are the Gayers. And yes, they know that is entirely too many projects for two people.
Welcome,
Lark and Jessie.
Thank you for having us.
Hello.
Thank you for being here. This is very exciting.
Four podcasts?
Yeah.
Sorry, just so that I understand, is it four podcasts that just the two of you do together? It's not like four podcasts with a team of a handful of other, you make four podcasts together.
In our defense, we are taking the summer off of the Gaily Prophet and Escape from Reality to put out the Gay Pirate podcast. But normally we do make three podcasts like all the time. Yes.
Wild. I said, I don't think you emphasized gay enough when you said the
it's
name
in
of
caps.
Your own podcast there.
Come
Could
on.
You try again?
It's to make it legible, because otherwise you're just like, what happened? What happened
there? Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. If you didn't capitalize it, people would be like, a Skype?
Exactly. Yeah. So, and I usually put it in there where I just like put parentheticals after where it's like spelled E-S-G-A-Y-P-E. But I forgot this time, so I put you in a predicament, and I'm sorry.
Hannah loves predicaments in general.
I love this predicament. I was born to be in this predicament. But we're not here to talk about any of your four podcasts. I mean, we can, obviously, but we're not. That's not what we're here to do. We're here to talk about a fifth project. Listen, this is a real pot calling the kettle black situation, but like...
Not for me, it's not. Y'all are doing too much. No, I'm just joking.
Yeah, we also both have ADHD and tend to agree to things or like start ideas as soon as they happen because we're very excited about them. And then we're like locked in because we're accountable to other people. So it creates its own joy. I don't know. You'd think people in our lives might start being like, wait, calm down. But instead, I'm like, I already texted Jessie about it, and she said yes. So too late. I drew the fan. Like, I drew the logo already.
So we're not here to talk about your podcast. We are here to talk about your guide on ethical fandom, created in collaboration with Fandom Forward.
In collaboration with a whole slew of creators. It was headed up and like conceptualized by Fandom Forward and Black Nerds Create, and then they pulled together the rest of us and we're like, hey, you do stuff like this a lot. Do you want to participate in this process? And we were like, yes, of course we do.
Can you give us a quick FYI about like, who are these organizations and what do they do?
So Fandom Forward is a organization where the gist is that they harness sort of the energy and power of fandom and funnel it into social justice causes. So they'll have like resources about how fans can connect with other people via Our Flag Means Death or Avatar the Last Airbender or Harry Potter. In fact, they used to be the Harry Potter Alliance, and you know, majority of their work was, you know, with Harry Potter fans, with using Harry Potter examples, but they have broaden their scope and changed their name in accordance to many of us sort of reevaluating HP in our lives.
And then the other organization was Black Nerds Unite.
Black Nerds Create.
Formerly Black Girls Create. They're kind of a hub of Black nerds and creators getting together to put out more Black nerd content into the world, and also a place for Black and not just, you know, Black nerds, but like all kinds of nerds can get together to talk about fandom in a way that is not an apolitical way to talk about fandom, as it were. So yeah, so they have podcasts like, you know, their first podcast was like hashtag Wizard Team, and now they're doing like The Nerds Are Talking, and what is the name of their Doctor Who one? I don't remember.
Tarbis.
Sorry, does Tarbis stand for something
Time
different than
and
Tarbis?
Relative Blackness in Space.
That's incredible.
Nice.
And they just started a Tolkien one too.
I love it.
That I think is called Tolkien Black Girls. Is that right?
Oh, it's some kind of Tolkien pun. But they're rad.
So they got together and then reached out to a bunch of people within the fandom community to create this guide.
Yeah. And I'm assuming Lark was doing a majority of the meeting with folks, but it was a lot of other fandoms, a lot of other content creators who were also talking about political things, like within their specific fandom.
I'm really interested in hearing more about how you went about creating the guide, but I think maybe first, I feel like this is work that the two of you have already done around your own podcasts in terms of creating resources for particularly the Harry Potter fandom to like navigate J.K. Rowling's public transphobia. So could you talk a little bit about the development of your own resources? Particularly, I'm thinking of your guide on firing J.K. Rowling. Like, what prompted the creation of that as a public resource?
Yeah, I mean, it was whenever that was, December of 2019, when J.K. Rowling first was like tweeting her support for Maya Forstater. And, you know, everyone was kind of like, what do we do with this information? And Jesse and I just like sat down via text message and we're like, what do we do with this information? And put together the first version of it that now I'm like, oh my God, that's like so sloppy. But you know what? I put it together in like 6 hours and got it up. So, and it's just been refined, you know, every time she's done, well, yeah, every time she did something up to a certain point, and I don't know, somewhere around last August,
we were in like, the timeline.
Yeah, we were like,
on your website where you're just like, and yeah, we're done.
You can,
we're not tracking this anymore.
Look it up yourself. Yeah. And so with each iteration, you know, we would have had a bunch of conversations with people in like the comment sections of the places where it was posted and find the things where people were most confused or most concerned or most upset, because at first we were calling it the guide to canceling J.K. Rowling, because like canceling gets people really excited. And it was like, the point is for people to look at this. And then like, just the word cancel was derailing the point of everything. And we kept just being like, okay, stop, please. Anyway, so we switched it to be more specific about what we actually mean, which is firing. And, you know, put together an FAQ for all the things like, but why can't I go to the theme park? And I think the final version is like really comprehensive and I'm very proud of it.
People are deeply upset about not going to the theme park.
They sure are.
Not going to the theme park is the number one saddest fan thing I can't do for me. I wrote about it in my book. I have like a footnote about like coming to terms with it and like framing it in terms of like Lauren Berlant's cruel optimism and the idea that like you have to recognize when sometimes the things that you want are actually counter to the thriving of yourself and your community. And like you have to wrap your head around that like you don't actually want this. You have just been taught that you want it. And it's in fact a way that your desires are being oriented in a way that turns you against what you need to actually be doing for yourself and your community. And like wrapping your head around that, like, no, it's not. Yeah. Anyway, that's the one. That's the only one that I was like, fuck it. I'll just steal everything else from this person. But like, can't steal into that theme park. Now I'm reconsidering. But
they're very good at that. Like, security is tight. So I would say that's probably that's the issue, right? Like, if you could just clip open the gate, you know, the like, you know, those chain link fences, just like bring your clippers. But they've got metal detectors before you go through. And yeah, it's a whole thing.
How do you feel about that in terms of firing J.K. Rowling? If we just cut the fence and slid.
As long as you don't buy any like food or merch while you're there, that's totally fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
If she didn't get a percent of the door sales, then it would not matter, you know, because logically she should only make money from things sold in that part of the park. But she is a really good deal.
Yes.
Which apparently her amount that she gets goes up to like in tandem with inflation. So she's got a better deal than like,
for fuck's sake,
you know, minimum God? Wage in the United States.
So I'm realizing that maybe if we have any listeners who don't follow the Gailey Prophet on Instagram, which seems unlikely, but it's possible, you know, no judgment. Can you two talk a little bit about what you mean by the form? So like, I know you were initially releasing Instagram posts to give people guidance. So am I right? That's how it started. And what's the final form of it now?
Yeah. So I mean like the current deck of like Instagram slides and also what we have available on our website, which I think is like #ruthless.com/resource guide. And it's, I think it's kind of silly to actually be like final form as if I'm never going to edit it. But like the one that we've used like the last 3 times people have been like, hey, can you post that thing? I haven't had to make any changes is why I'm calling it final.
That's fine. Like if you make changes in the future, it's a new edition. It's no longer like you've gone from draft.
It's just like the document history when you're working on something and it's like final and then it's final underscore really final underscore really underscore June 2022. Final is relative. Okay, so you've got some experience with guide creating via your guide on firing J.K. Rowling. So let's shift now to talking about this new guide, which is why you're here in the first place, about ethical fandom and building ethical fan spaces. So can we start off maybe by talking a little bit about who the guide is for?
The guide says that it's for fan activists or anyone who is, you know, trying to channel the love of fandom for good, for the good, quote unquote, capital G. And I actually would just like to add to that, that I think it is also an excellent guide for anyone who is, for people who aren't necessarily going to be using fandom energy for social justice causes, but even just want to have a not terrible fandom space, you know, let it be like a Discord, or, you know, you're trying to do tabletop RPG, like in-person group, or like really any of those things, because of sort of the broadness of the practices, of the best practices that are listed, that are laid out in the guide.
Could you give us an example of like how the guide might be useful for somebody who, you know, wouldn't necessarily call themselves an activist, but maybe wants to start a tabletop RPG and, you know, wants the people who are joining it to all feel good about joining it?
Yeah, totally. One of the tenets is sort of intentionality. And one of like the very first kind of like tenets under that is to establish like community agreements. And really the importance of that is kind of the reason why everyone says don't read the comments, which is an unmoderated fandom space, whether online or in person. Like the possibility of, say, people who have marginalized identities being shoved out or being made uncomfortable, it can be really easy for that thing to happen unless you're intentionally saying that, like, hey, we don't have any, like, you know, language, you know, that's hurtful for other people. We have, like, you know, a guideline to specifically deal with that. We are actually really clear about how we are sharing kind of the norms of, like, our fandom space. And, you know, just even just thinking about, like, who are you building this community for? So if you're like, man, I want to have a, like, you know, tabletop RPG group at the library for, like, teens. You know, and it's like, great. And then, but then you have to think about, like, so there's like the logistics of, say, how are you going to share these norms? How are you going to communicate to folks that, you know, it's a welcome space? And then also just even the, like, all right, so you're going to have certain hours for this. You're going to have, you know, there's going to be a certain kind of like activity level if you stay at a library versus at your local comic book store. If you're at a comic book store, are they going to be sexist douchebags? Can I say douchebags in this show?
You can. Yes.
Are they going to?
Yeah,
are they,
you sure,
like,
can.
The sexist douchebag comic book store owners? Are they like the chill, a bunch of like cool rad people there, and they're so excited about having a like diverse group of people play RPGs there? And just sort of being, just being like really seriously intentional about, you have to create opening welcome space, and you can't just be like, well, we all love Our Flag Means Death, so we can all just get together and talk about it and not have to have any kind of guidelines about, you know, anything. It's like, people don't work like, when you get a bunch of people from all over with different backgrounds and different experiences,
you can't just assume.
Yeah. So like what you're saying is that instead of assuming that all of the people who share like a love and an affection for the same thing will also share a kind of like politics of respect and egalitarianism, you like actually put into motion best practices and policies that showcase that kind of everybody is welcome here attitude, instead of just assuming that it'll be there. And then when it's not there, being like, whoops.
Or not even being like, whoops, just being like, well, not my problem. Because I think a lot of people create communities and then don't take responsibility for the dynamics that exist in those communities. We've certainly seen a lot of like fallout from that kind of behavior. You know, this really reminds me of the work that you do at the beginning of a semester creating a classroom environment, right? Which is another kind of community where it's like, cool, okay, let's figure out like what the needs of this particular group are. Let's set some norms around how we're going to treat each other. Let's make sure that there's really clear guidelines about what behavior is okay and what behavior is not going to be okay. And let's try to do that, as you say here, under intentionality, let's try to do that thoughtfully. Like, let's actually, you know, not assume that there's a one-size-fits-all way of organizing. You know, here's how you organize a good community. Check, 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 done. That you've got to actually ask, like, okay, who are the people in this community? What are their needs? What are their, you know, are there access concerns? Are there, like, what are the realities of people's lives? These are all super vital questions to be asking, I think, no matter what kind of community you're trying to draw together.
I think hand in hand with that is also being intentional and thoughtful about what accountability looks like. And accountability is actually one of the tenets, because as I think people in the United States are struggling with, sometimes calling out people's either potentially ignorance of a thing or willful malice of their actions and words, it's like, okay, so what do we do about that? And the sort of dominant culture answer is ignore it. It's, or just kind of be like, oh, you don't want to be too rude. You got to be polite. It's like sweep it under the rug. And so it's really great because the guide also lays out, you know, ways of cultivating accountability. There's even just kind of like a step-by-step about how to apologize authentically, which I feel like any media creator should know how to do, because we are only human and no one is perfect. Like, we're going to say things.
Yes. No, this is definitely a thing that we have had to learn how to do. I think anybody who makes something public that you, you know, do your best to think about the impact of your work and then you put it out in the world, and sometimes you have not thought about aspects of how it's going to impact people. And that is like the beauty and unpredictability of doing things in public. My friend Aaron taught me to reframe critique as a generous act, that like when people critique something that you're doing, they have taken the effort and time to like actually think about it and to share with you what has come out of their thinking, and that you can receive that as a gift, or you can like throw up a block in the way of it. And really, for me, that reframing was so helpful, to be like, critique is a gift.
Yeah, that's like almost exactly. So we, like, obviously all of this was created as a coalition, but then we each like took sections that we wrote, the actual part that's going on the website, and the apology section is one of the things that I wrote. And that's like almost exactly what I put as step four of the apology, is like, they gave you a gift. Your apology needs to end with a thank you. Like, make sure that that's a part of what you're doing here, because like time and energy are valuable resources, and someone giving theirs to you is something that you should be grateful for. And I think it's easy to assume that like people just call each other out on the internet because like they think it's super fun. And I think maybe sometimes that's true, but a lot of times people are calling you out because they respect you so much that they're surprised that you screwed up. And like, that's so nice of them, you know?
Yeah. I really appreciate how in the accountability section, you begin with the creation of genuine relationships and then move to apologizing authentically, because that has, for me at least, been so central to figuring out how to navigate being a public person and how to decide, you know, I get to decide who I'm accountable to. And then when I've decided that, then I know who, you know, who can hold me accountable and who I owe an apology to when I fuck up. So like, that helps me distinguish between like, if somebody sends us an email and is like, I'm mad because your podcast is too feminist, I can be like, cool, fuck right off. Like, because you're not, I'm not accountable to you. This is not, you're not part of the community that I am identifying. So like that making the deliberate community and the relationships come first, I think really helps us understand that like accountability is about relationships, not about just like creating an environment where like whoever whoever yells at you the loudest wins.
Yeah. I think too, like, I think a lot about in the original Run of Witch, Please, we had a segment and we definitely explained what the point of it was in our first episode. But unsurprisingly, it became one of the most controversial parts of our podcast, not because it itself was controversial, but because people who didn't listen to that first episode didn't know why we were doing it. And so on the one hand, so I bring this up because on the one hand, just thinking in terms of like when you are accountable to people and who you are accountable for, it's not necessarily a binary. Like there's a category of people who we will be accountable to and one who we won't. It's like sometimes there will be a group of people who we do want to be accountable to, but if they haven't done their own homework, we can't be expected to like reteach the lesson every time, right? But then at the same time, when we started the new run of the podcast, we decided to not reboot that particular segment. One, because we had done with it what we set out to do. And the other reason is because it very clearly did bother a lot of people. And so, you know, these things are complicated and we're constantly needing to make these decisions about like what does accountability mean and what do we expect from our listeners and what do our listeners expect from us. And these things are, they're like changing and we change with them.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey folks, Hannah here. I'm jumping into your feed before today's episode to let you know that I have a brand new YouTube show called Making Worlds. Monthly episodes are released on our Witch Please Productions Patreon, and they are an absolute hoot. Every episode, I am joined by a cool guest to talk about a sci-fi or fantasy text that has inspired them to move differently in the world and to imagine otherwise. Our first episode was about Our Flag Means Death, and our second episode is about Dimension 20. I am a huge nerd about both of those franchises, so as you can imagine, I had the time of my life. You can watch the episodes or listen to them as a podcast right now by becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/awitchplease. You'll also get access to a backlog of many other perks. Again, head to patreon.com/awitchplease to become a supporter today for as little as $5 a month. Speaking of the complexity of accountability, the third sort of action within accountability here is about navigating your relationship with problematic faves, which we've already talked about in the context of J.K. Rowling and firing J.K. Rowling. But in this section, the guide points out that, like, there isn't necessarily a one-size-fits-all response to problematic faves. Can you talk a little bit more about that, like, adjusting your tactics depending on the problematic fave in question?
Yeah, totally. So when I was drafting this particular piece of things, I was like, okay, I'm just going to pick like from the fandoms that I am invested in, which is like, I'm not as multi-fandom as a lot of other folks are. And also just like the ones that we've had to talk about. So I was like, let's go with Joss Whedon as like least problematic in terms of public impact. And I think that that's like a really important, like, I am not saying that he is less problematic in terms of the damage that he does, but in terms of how he affects people outside of his bubble, right? He's below J.K. Rowling on the scale.
He's not like advocating against the human rights of a whole group of people.
Exactly. And then, it, you know, it's like, what's worse than J.K. Rowling? Oh, Disney. Like, Disney is actively participating in politics in the United States that are harming the same people as J.K. Rowling and more. So, you know, it was like, okay, let's think about this. How does ethically engaging change from one level to the next? And Jesse and I spent so much time talking about this, and I had already, right? Because also we make a Buffy podcast. And so when like everything about Joss Whedon came out, we were like, what are we doing with this? You know, like a lot of folks were like, yeah, like never watch Buffy again. And I think partly it's like a TV show is the creation of a lot more people than just the showrunner, A. But also that doesn't really do anything. You know, with someone like Joss Whedon, what needs to happen is he needs to not be given positions of power, right? Because he abuses those positions of power. He's done with his position of power with Buffy. Like, that's over. But we can, as a fandom, say, hey, like, we don't want him to direct more movies, actually. We want you to stop hiring him. So you can boycott future projects that he is the director of, or you can make it very clear, like be vocal about not wanting him to be involved, but you don't have to like let go of the things that you love because they're in the past. Obviously with J.K. Rowling, you're like, we already talked about that. You're not buying her stuff. You're like boycotting everything that gives her money.
You're engaging in piracy regarding anything that she is involved with.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you're being gay and doing crimes.
Piracy.
Absolutely.
And petty theft.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the other really important piece of like her level of problematicness is that smaller scale people with less name recognition who are doing the same kind of damage, you do need to just walk away from the fandom. Like, you need to just be done, because every time you talk about it, you are spread, like, more people are hearing about the work. Like, it's getting bigger as a result of your participation in the fandom. But like, that doesn't make sense with Harry Potter, because people who have never read or seen Harry Potter, like, know what house they associate with, you know? Like, if we all walk away from the fandom, then it's just people who agree with J.K. Rowling who are left in the fandom, and it becomes like a terrible echo chamber of harm. And then obviously Disney, like, you can't do anything. Like, Disney owns everything.
Yeah, Disney,
yeah,
what's
my
your
answer? Is pay attention to what people who work for Disney are saying. Like, if they ask you to boycott something or ask you to, you know, participate in some sort of action, do it. Make it clear that you don't like what they're doing. If there is, you know, if someone's like, yes, please cancel your Disney Plus account, like, do it. Tell people that you're doing it. But also, and I think this is true across the board, is like, we all need to be more intentional about praising good behavior. And I think this is the one place where it's like, oh yeah, that's really important. It's really important for all of them, but I think that might be the most powerful tool we have with something like Disney, is like, if someone's like, this is a terrible work environment, I quit, like, especially if it's an act of allyship and not someone who's actively being harmed, be like, you are great. Like, we are all very happy with the decision that you have made. Or if Disney changes their practices, be like, thank you so much. We're all so glad that you have made this decision.
I want to ask a question about that, because something that I think about is the way that a mega corporation like Disney does have the power to normalize things that smaller organizations don't, right? So this is an example that is not based on anything I've seen, because I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I have heard that there is a same-sex kiss in the new Buzz Lightyear movie, and as a result, there are people who are boycotting and canceling screenings and that kind of thing. And so, I don't know, can you guys talk a little bit about like how we navigate the praising the behavior that we want to see, which is normalizing queer sexuality, for example, while at the same time not saying, as a result of this one movie, this one instance in this one movie, Disney is therefore all good. You know, How do we do it? What do you think? What do you recommend?
I feel like you can potentially just not talk about it as like a Disney decision, right? Because again, like visual media is something that's created by so many people. So being like, you know, this great thing that we're really happy about in this specific movie, and like talk about the director, talk about the screenwriter, talk about, you know, the people who made that decision, because it wasn't whoever is the head of Disney who's like deciding to fund the Florida Don't Say Gay bill. Like, that's not the person who signed off on this. And I, you know, obviously you're not going to like talk about that and therefore like stop talking about the bad things that Disney is doing. I think you can just do both. And again, like Disney owns like literally half of the fandoms out there. Like they own Marvel, they own Star Wars, they own everything. So like, and Disney-ness in and of itself is a fandom. It's a confusing fandom, but it is a fandom. And you can't just be like, yeah, boycott Disney. Like,
I mean, you can. It's just an unrealistic call.
Right, exactly.
And I think part of these conversations is that there needs to be a balance of like, people want to love things. They want to engage with these things that they love. And so giving guidance on how to do that ethically and with nuance, I think is always going to be more useful than being like, no, don't love it. You're bad. You're bad for loving it. Stop. Love nothing. Like a true politically pure person. Love nothing but critique and freedom.
And then you are the mage from Carry On, and you're just sad all the time.
You did it. You're so sad, but you're so pure. Okay, so let's talk about loving things, because the third section of the guide is about imagination, and it's all about like the fun things we get to do in fandom, about like remixing and gender bending and race bending and all of the sort of playful ways that we get to engage with our fandoms. So why is this part of the guide?
This is where Jesse gets to talk, because I am like, oh yeah, you want to talk about canceling people and apologizing? That's me. And it's like, Jesse's like, yeah, you want to talk about fun parts of fandom? I will definitely talk to you.
Honestly, I feel that remixing is just one of the core foundational practices of fandom in general, where like you're not passively just consuming like say a movie or a television show or a book. You're like, you know, you're thinking about it, you're engaging with it. I mean, a lot of what fandom is known for, let's be real, is say, for example, slash fan fiction or like art, where it's like, man, I really wish Kirk and Spock would kiss. Clearly they're in love. Like this is the birth of modern fandom, is people being like, man, let me write stories and draw pictures and create a zine about Kirk and Spock being in love.
Yeah. I wish these characters could kiss. Wait a minute. I can make them
No
kiss.
One is stopping me from telling other people about this story I wrote about how they're...
I'm so powerful.
And the power in that, and say, for example, you know, with race bending, where you're like, oh, but what if Hermione was black, actually, is creating space for yourself where maybe you're not seen reflected in the sort of gate-kept realm of major movies, television shows, like published books, like things where that have been traditionally been very white and heterosexual because they are controlled by, mm-hmm. you know, capitalism. And
which is controlled by white heterosexual dudes.
I mean, not only does it bring people joy, but it also helps people discover things about themselves. In the podcast, The Gaily Prophet, we have started since book one a headcanon that Hagrid is a trans woman. And we get so many emails, have gotten so many messages from people who are like engaging with this headcanon, you guys talking about it and, you know, and like discussing it has helped me realize that I am like trans and non-binary.
Yeah, we recently got an email from someone that was like, I realized that I'm asexual from a like 2-minute long conversation that you had on Escape from Reality about reading Agatha as aromantic. And I realized that like, that's how I feel about sexuality. I was like, neat. This is the best. Great. Cool.
It is the best.
And I also just want to point out that obviously this is sort of like the transformative power of art. But sometimes you can just be like, I want to just imagine these characters in space instead. And that's just kind of the, you know, that's the fun part of fandom.
And that's when I figured out that I was a space sexual.
But the guy just lists out, just kind of like, you know, if you see a piece of art and you're like, oh man, I really am inspired by this, this like that, this fan art that someone has created based on the canon of whatever media, and you also want to like, you're inspired by that and want to create something that like, you should cite them.
Oh yeah, I caught that Sarah Ahmed reference in there. Feminist politics of citation. Here for it.
And then, you know, if possible, when doing like, you know, say fan events or any other kind of things where there is potentially financial compensation, to be financially compensating people, which is a good kind of lead into just sort of a part of the guy that came out of a thing that me and Lark do with all hashtag Ruthless Productions, which is like financial transparency. Like once every 3 or 4 months.
Truly, it's whenever I have the energy.
whenever Lark feels like it, he will do a detailed post on Instagram about like, hey, we made this much money. Here's basically to the cent of where the, you know, the money that we get from patrons and merch, which is the 100% where we get our any money through our podcast is through listener support. Exactly where it goes. So much about financial equity is on people not knowing how much money other people are getting compensated, and you know, how are artists and writers supposed to know how to charge if they have no idea what everyone else is making? And you know, commonly in the workplace, if you don't talk to your coworkers about how much they're making, you have no idea if the new person is making twice what you are making.
I want to backtrack just a tiny bit, because Jesse, you were talking about, you know, the power of fandom to make space for people who are otherwise very often not represented. And I want to talk a little bit about the point that the guide makes about guardianship versus gatekeeping. Do you want to talk a little bit about that distinction and why that distinction is important?
Sorry, I was just picturing you going, no, moving on.
We cannot talk about that.
Absolutely not.
Gatekeeping is an ongoing issue in so many fandoms, which is this sort of idea that fans need to somehow prove that they're a real fan or that they're like quote unquote fake fans. And it's like that kind of intentional, like blocking people from enjoying or accessing fandom is messed up. Like that's not what fandom should be about. But it's kind of like the discussion about why non-Indigenous witches shouldn't use white sage in their witchcraft.
Yeah, that's not gatekeeping. That's guarding a cultural practice that white people have appropriated and like with really terrible consequences.
Right. There are plenty of alternatives to white sage or even the term smudging, which is like also a specific like Indigenous practice and not just, you know, something that every non-Indigenous witch should be doing. Yeah. And so like the importance of both like preserving the culture of using white sage and also kind of not the the plant itself as a finite resource is important. And that's like much different than gatekeeping, which would be like, don't use crystals that you got from Five Below. Like that's not real witchcraft. And it's like, who is making these? You? Like just for some random person?
Yeah. Like on the one hand, you're talking about the integrity of a cultural practice. And then on the other hand, you're talking about like making people feel bad for not being able to afford like expensive crystals. And these are very, very different ways of maintaining a community. One is like an act of building and nurturing a community. And then the other one is an act of like keeping people out of a community.
Yeah, this actually makes me think on the topic of the fourth key area in the guide, which is community care, you're making me think about conversations that are happening in the open access realm in scholarly communication about how the sort of prioritizing open access can become itself this like hardline value that people will be like, everything has to be open access or bust. And then it will be like, well, but not everything is actually necessarily for everyone. Like, if you're doing a digital project where you're digitizing like indigenous stories that have their own particular protocols of like when those stories can be read or who's allowed to have access to them, you don't necessarily want, like, open access isn't necessarily the right approach to those stories. Like, they might actually need to have restricted access for particular communities. So let's talk a little bit more about community care. What are the sort of, you know, core tenets of community care, and why is this an important part of the sort of larger conversation about ethical fandom communities?
So this first practice is on prioritizing accessibility, which I feel like is a conversation that disabled fans have amongst themselves, but I think in general fandom could be better about. One of the points under this is just to kind of like building in accessibility from the beginning of your project, work, whatever. And as an example, at Hashtag Ruthless, we always make sure to have alt text for every image that we have on Instagram. And I try very hard for that we do on Twitter also, because there are fans out there who use a screen reader for a variety of reasons. It doesn't matter what, but they do. And it's important for those fans to have access to our work and the information that we're putting out there. And especially on something like Twitter, like alt text on an image they make it very easy. And I still see it so infrequently, it's deeply frustrating. And then there's things like, you know, what is the layout and the color scheme of your website? You know, for podcasts, a huge thing is having transcripts for folks who want to know what's happening in the podcast and would rather be able to like have it as a transcript. And that kind of work is important in having fandom truly be another space that is welcoming of everyone.
Yeah. Accessibility itself, I think, is also a conversation that we tend to have as a kind of, as a binary, right? Of like, either you're accessible or you're not accessible. And recognizing that accessibility is something that you can always do more of, that there's always ways to improve it, and that recognizing that you could always do more of it is not a reason to not start with the things that you can do. So being like, cool, we're a indie podcast and we, you know, can't get corrected transcripts out yet, but we'll start with automated transcripts because we can do those, and then we'll start correcting them as soon as we have the capacity. Where, you know, like things like image descriptions on Instagram and alt text on Twitter is like really low-hanging fruit. So like recognizing that there's things that you can start with that aren't, you know, you don't have to be perfect or nothing.
I have another question for you too, and I'm going to confess that it's a leading question. I'm not actually ignorant of the difference between these two things, but I want you to talk about it because I think it's important. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the choice to refer to the guide as a best practices guide and not as, say, a rule book. Like, I think we've been really getting at this idea a lot throughout the course of our conversation, but I'd love for you to you know, talk through why the language of best practices is maybe more useful than, say, here are the rules for accessible fandom.
How to be good.
Yeah, there was a point where I was talking with one of the lead folks at Fandom Forward about like, should we put like a TLDR at the bottom of every article? And we're like, and every single one would just be, don't be a dick. Like, I think that's the TLDR of like, the whole thing. But I think it really, I mean, yeah, it's just like, the whole point is to create a fandom that's like open and inviting and welcoming and like help people feel empowered to do that more and better, and using wording to describe what this is that feels inviting and feels expansive and like something where you can like, you know, start somewhere and work your way up as you have the time and resources to be able to, I think just makes sense.
What's your long-term hope for this project? What do you want out of it?
I would just like a, in general, a kinder fandoms where people are kinder to each other. I've been in fandom since the late 90s, and I've seen so many collapse under just people being very cruel and mean to each other. And I'm just like, it doesn't have to be like this.
I feel like we could keep talking about this guide for probably another hour easily. But, you know, one of these final practices is self and community care. And I think we all want to stop sitting or want to sit harder, depending on where we're sort of at personally. So
sit more horizontal.
Sit more horizontal. Yeah. What are you doing sitting down? You should be horizontal now, as one of my bops of the summer says. That's Chaise Longue by Wet Lake. Everybody go listen to it.
Coach, could you just drop a sample?
Could you drop
just
it
drop
in?
A sample.
Could you just drop it? Coach, could you
right
just
there.
Put it? Could you put it right here? Here? Yeah? Okay. Thanks.
Hey you over there on the Chaise Longue in your underwear. What are you doing sitting down? You should be horizontal now.
So if people want to go and read this guide for themselves, where do they find it?
Yeah, it is at fandomforward.org/4fanorganizers.
Amazing. And we'll put a link to it in the show notes as well, obviously. Obviously. And if people want more of you, where do they go? If they were like, you're so charming, you're so smart and funny, how do we get more
Which
of you?
Which obviously is how they're all feeling right now.
Yeah.
So we're at #ruthless.com and we are on Instagram and Twitter at @thegaileyprophet. And we're on all of the podcast apps. I think if you search #ruthless, you should find all of our podcasts, but you know.
That's hashtag spelled out as the word,
sure
not
is.
As the not as
it's
the,
funnier that
the
way.
Sign.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's my kind of joke. I love a typographical joke. All right. Well, everybody share this beautiful guide and hopefully we can all collectively just make the spaces that we're in a little kinder.
Thank you, witches, for joining us for another episode of Witch Please. Witch Please is produced in partnership with Wilfrid Laurier University Press and distributed by Acast. You can find the rest of our episodes on our beautiful coach-designed website, owitchplease.ca. Special thanks, as always, to that team player of a producer, Hannah Rehack, a.k.a. Coach.
Thanks, Coach.
If you want to hang out with us some more, we're on Twitter and Instagram at @owitchplease with a ton of hot new content. Thanks to our Witch Please apprentice, Zoe Mix. Thanks, Zoe.
Thanks, Zoe. And thank you to everyone who supports us on Patreon. We are continuing to work via your support on the transcription of the podcast. Seasons 5 and 6 are now fully transcribed with the rest in progress. If you're not already a Patreon supporter, this is a really great time to jump on the bandwagon. We've got all kinds of new content. The newest perks are blooper reels for every episode, a comic based on those blooper mm-hmm. reels, and also Marcel will name your pets for you.
You bet I will.
So what can't you get through our Patreon?
And appliances.
Marcel will also name your appliances for you. So you should probably head over to patreon.com/owitchplease to find out more about the various tiers.
If you're not able to contribute financially, but you still want to lend us a hand, we would absolutely love it if you dropped us a review on Apple Podcasts. At the end of every episode, we'll shout out everyone who left us a 5-star review. So you've got to review us. If you want to hear me brush my teeth with a bottle of Jack,
Yeah, because when I leave for the night, I'm not coming back.
Thanks this week to Jasper underscore not underscore the underscore park.
Your commitment to reading all of the underscores is one of my many favorite things about this part of the podcast.
Aw, thank you. Speaking of which, hearts underscore built to spill underscore for life. Aviv Pash, E. M. Cools, Tommy, and 2019. But it's probably MH 2019 with 3 exclamation marks.
The next episode dropping into your feed will be some more special bonus content, followed by the first episode on Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, dropping on August 23rd. But until then,
later, witches.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.